This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker. Is brought to you with compliments of Dischem Baby City.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Yes, you are on Bump and Beyond, and I am your host, Yolandi Becker. And as always, we are talking parenting. This month of June, we are observing World Infertility Awareness Month. It's an important month to observe and to talk about topics that are related to this. Highlighting during this time is obviously infertility issues faced by people around the world each year. There is a misconception that infertility actually affects only a small part of the population, but there are many couples who experience some form of infertility. So important to share in this very like relatable topic in the end of the day, a common reality for many of these couples. And this is what our show is about today. Includes miscarriages as part of this journey of infertility. And I want to start off because, again, as always, I do want you to be part of this very important topic and to share your own experiences, because that's exactly what it is. It's Awareness Month. And it is important for us to create awareness by sharing our experiences of this topic and of miscarriages. I want to start off because, again, when I was sharing on social media what the show was about today, understanding miscarriages, introducing my guests as well on social media, it was really, I was inundated with messages from various people about this. Just highlighting, it's not people, it's moms, women out there who are sharing their feelings on this topic and sharing their own experiences. And I wanted to share one specific one from a friend of mine. And she messaged me to say, I had two miscarriages before having my kids. The doctor figured out the problem, but still, just seeing that message from you 24 years after it happened, it still saddens me and triggers that sadness. Women are expected to deal with it. It's a death that doesn't get recognized. No funeral, no public grieving. People asking how your pregnancy is going, and you just want to cry the whole time. I was so grateful for my job because it took my mind off it. We didn't think we'd ever have children. She was diagnosed with anticardiolipin-9 syndrome, injected herself every day throughout the pregnancy, and now has two wonderful young adult kids. But it was a hectic time. And I mean, again, this is, we're talking about 24 years later, and you can hear the grief, the sadness in those messages. And that's why it's so important for us to create awareness and be observant of this very relevant topic and to share in our experiences, because I do feel that when you know you're not alone, it might make a difference during this journey, that you don't feel so isolated. But as always, I am not talking about this by myself, for sure not. I want you to be part of the conversation. So if you have questions messages to send, your own experience, maybe a friend of yours, because I have many friends who send me messages, please do send me a telegram on 061-895-1019, or you can SMS us at 34519. SMSs are charged at 1.50 rand. If you don't yet have our Chai FM app, you need to download it on your phone now. You can directly send a message to us from the Chai FM app and be in contact with us while you're listening to it, live streaming it on the app. So please do that. But today, joining me to talk about and understanding miscarriages, because that is also part of this awareness, is understanding why it happens, what is going on, is there something we're doing wrong? Knowing that you're not doing anything wrong is probably the best part of it. But talking with me today is Dr. Maotu, who's an endoscopic surgeon and fertility specialist at FemiCare Fertility Clinic. Hello, doctor. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me. You can call me Tato, by the way. It's much easier.
Oh, Tato. I feel like if you've got a title like a surgeon and fertility specialist, I feel you've earned the title of doctor. So in all honesty, and also joining us is also from FemiCare, is Michelle Groenewald, who is a certified perinatal bereavement facilitator and trainer. Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine, Yolandi.
Yes. So let's start off the conversation just to, again, I feel I know so many women who have experienced miscarriages. So I know it's not an uncommon thing, but how common is having a miscarriage? Dr. Mordu, let's go for you.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the background of miscarriages. So the definition of miscarriage sometimes confuses a lot of people. The definition is actually quite simple. It's pregnancy loss before viability. And the World Health Organization has defined viability as 24 weeks gestation or 500 grams. So that is the definition of miscarriage. Okay. Now, worldwide, and most of the statistics that we have show that the overall prevalence of miscarriage is sitting at about 10%.
Oh, okay? Wow.
10% is a lot, but just to scare you even worse, I'm going to talk a little bit about the conception pyramid. So we as the human species, we are terrible at making babies, having a live baby. So if we were to look at every conception that happens, most women actually lose 60% of their conceptors before they even know they're pregnant. So you lose 60% off the bat. 10% is miscarriage, which means you know you're pregnant and then you now lose the pregnancy. And only about 30% actually makes it, 25 to 30% makes it to us, to, yeah, you know, a live baby. So that's inefficient as a species. So you're looking at about 10% statistically speaking.
I mean, now you've mentioning here as well, because that's also something that I read a lot when I was looking at miscarriages and the prevalence of it and doing some research on it. One of the topics that came up and what you mentioned here as well is that before you even notice that you're pregnant, but would you notice as a woman that you are miscarrying?
Yeah, well, most women...
What are we talking here? Like more bleeding? What is happening? How would you notice it?
So actually, that's a very good question because, you know, if you look at those statistics, it means most women actually have a miscarriage and don't even know they're having one. Mm. But most women, I mean, in those instances, you're going to have, your period will probably be delayed by a few days and you're going to see heavier bleeding, maybe a little bit more cramping. Some women describe that. But I don't want us, I'm a bit hesitant for us to dwell on that too much because I feel like it's going to depress a lot of people. It's very difficult, but I don't want now people overthinking it, that every time their period is late or they're bleeding a bit heavier than normal, that they're having a miscarriage.
But now if we're talking about a longer gestational period, if you're saying like 24 weeks, a viable pregnancy, when we're talking about it, what would be the symptoms then at that point that you would know that you're, I don't know, in the process of miscarrying, that you should be going to the doctor? What are we talking here now?
The best way to classify miscarriage, so we classify miscarriage according to your trimesters. Okay, so it follows that first trimester miscarriages are more common than second trimester miscarriages. But second trimester miscarriages are a lot more sinister than first trimester miscarriage. So the common symptoms that you would experience, the most common is PV bleeding. When you're pregnant, you should not have bleeding through your vagina. That's the commonest. Obviously, that can be associated with cramp, like pain. Those are actually contractions. Those are the same contractions you have at delivery. Those cramps except your baby has not reached viability yet. And obviously, the more advanced you are, you can also have your water breaking, which is your amniotic fluid now flowing down your leg. That's obviously more in the second trimester. You won't experience that in the first trimester. You'll just perceive everything as PV bleeding. So those are the most common symptoms. We call them danger signs. So this is what we tell our patients early on in pregnancy, that there are certain danger signs. If you see those signs, it means come straight to the hospital or go to your nearest hospital.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker. Is brought to you with compliments of Dis-Chem Baby City.
If you've just joined me, yes, you are on 101.9 High FM, and this is Bump and Beyond. And as always, we're talking parenting today. A harder topic, I feel, to talk about when we're talking about things that are not nice, because miscarriage, though, is, as we heard from the doctor, or from Tato, as he said, I should be calling him, is that, we're talking about miscarriages, and it's a very common kind of situation and common thing, more common than when we realize how common it is. And that's why it's important to share in our experiences when it comes to miscarriage, to know that you're not alone, because I really do believe when it comes to grief and anything, parenting as well, when you're isolated, I mean, these type of situations make you feel isolated, that you are, you can't talk with anyone about it. And when we are sharing in our experiences, I feel it makes a difference to know that you at least have support and that you know that someone else has gone through this as well. So as always, I want you to be part of the conversation. So if you have a shared experience, or just have questions even for the doctor, please do send us a telegram on 061-895-1019. SMS us at 34519. And remember that SMSs are charged at R1.50. So, doctor, before we went to the ad break, we were specifically talking about the different symptoms. And as we see that the further along you get with your pregnancy, obviously it changes those type of things. But I mean, I know, you were now mentioning that a very big thing or is that you shouldn't have bleeding while pregnant. But I mean, I do know of friends of mine who had some spotting and things like that. So is that always something that you should be worried about? Is you should immediately go to the doctor if you see any spotting or bleeding?
Spotting is part of the signs of normal early pregnancy. I say normal in inverted commas. Normal bleeding in pregnancy is usually spotting that disappears. You see it when you wipe, more than active bleeding. The spotting shouldn't actually last the whole day. You shouldn't be bleeding the whole day.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be getting progressively worse. So a little bit of bleeding early on, and that's the big thing, is that early on, usually before 7 weeks, sometimes it can be up to 10 weeks, but before 7 weeks, obviously the more advanced the pregnancy, then we expect no bleeding at all.
Okay.
So if I'm being honest, most bleeding, if you see bleeding, at least go to your local gynecologist or obstetrician. Go to your local hospital just to exclude the more sinister things that happen.
Okay. No, that's good. And I mean, it's also good to know, because I also feel with all things, and I mean, maybe you can correct me, is that if there's early intervention, there might be still something to do about it. Or is it helpless? Let me roll this like that.
It's not quite helpless. But in truth, remember, and we haven't really discussed some of the causes of
yes, but let's get into that as well.
Yeah, so I was going to say it depends on the causes. There are some miscarriages that we can't prevent. Okay, so we must be honest about those. For example, especially early on in pregnancy, if, say, you have an abnormal fetus or an abnormal fetus with abnormal chromosomes, yes, that miscarriage, even if you try and give different interventions, there's not much that you're going to do about it.
Yes.
We usually say it's God's way of, you know, limiting that, because if the baby won't survive later on, usually you have a miscarriage early on.
Yeah.
Talking chromosomally speaking now. The interventions, the big one in the first trimester is progesterone. And that's a fairly recent intervention, and it's quite mind blowing. But there is some evidence in specific patients for the use of progesterone, and there are different progesterones that different doctors prefer. But, you know, there are also like some myths, you know, strict bed rest that we used to do in the past. People used to put their bums in the air and stay in that position for long periods of time. But the evidence actually does not suggest that there's any benefit to using any of those. Later on, in the second trimester, there are some instances where we can put a cervical cerclage, which is basically a stitch around the cervix, to prevent the cervix from opening.
Okay.
And we normally do that after we've excluded chromosomal abnormalities in the baby. So we scan the baby and do a few tests to try and exclude abnormalities in the baby, because it doesn't help to do that if the baby is abnormal.
Okay.
And what
would cause then that you would need this stitch? What would be the cause of it?
Cervical insufficiency.
So what does that mean? Please put that into I know what it means.
In the past, we used to call it
terms.
Cervical incompetence. Basically, it means that your cervix cannot keep the pregnancy in the uterus. Because remember that your cervix is the mouth of the womb. So your mouth of the womb is not strong enough to keep the growing pregnancy in the womb. So as the baby grows or the pregnancy develops, that obviously stretches the now weaker mouth of the womb, allowing the mouth of the womb to open, and then you lose the pregnancy in that way. I was going to say there are certain instances, like your friend, the friend that you mentioned has a condition called antiphospholipid syndrome. One of the antibodies that we check for is anti-cardiolipin, but then those are certain conditions that have specific treatments. So we know that in those patients, it means clexane, which is because the problem with that condition is that you get clots. As the placenta forms, you get clots in the placenta. And then that obviously kills off the placenta because of the decreased blood supply. And then you lose the pregnancy that way. So we give you blood thinners to prevent the clots from forming. So there are two types. One is the injection, which is that heparin. It's a blood thinner. But we also use aspirin with that. So there are certain conditions that we can treat individually. So it's important.
When do you pick up those certain conditions? Is it something that you would pick up then only after a miscarriage, or could you pick this up already before you get pregnant when you go for a checkup or something like that? Would you be able to pick it up already then if you go for regular gynecological? I remember before deciding to become pregnant, I went for a checkup at my gynecologist just to make sure everything's fine and that everything will be fine. Also to, you know, how long will it take after I take my or go off the pill, how long it will take me to get pregnant, is there something I have to like think about? Would you be able to pick up certain conditions already as early on as then?
Yes, that's very
have
true.
Preventative action to ensure or to help
Yolandi's
chances
breaking.
Of miscarriage.
I lost you there for a second there, Yolandi, but I think I got the gist of the question. I think there's a more important question in your question, which is, when should you investigate someone for miscarriages? Because we don't, as we said, it's quite common. So if a patient comes and has an early pregnancy loss, one early pregnancy loss, actually the chances of you having a live baby in the subsequent pregnancies is actually very good. So there isn't actually yes, we still investigate in some instances, but it doesn't improve the outcome in the subsequent pregnancy. But after two pregnancy losses, we should definitely investigate and look for a cause. So if you have two pregnancy losses, then by definition, we'd say you have recurrent pregnancy loss, which means repeated miscarriages. And then those patients we must now investigate. So, for example, in the antiphospholipid syndrome, there are certain baseline investigations that we need to do for those patients. And one of those investigations is looking for antiphospholipid syndrome. Okay. So also included in that is obviously we must now have a look inside of the cavity and do at least a decent enough ultrasound that we know that the womb is actually adequate to hold a baby. And there are some infections also that we can affect your pregnancy. And your thyroid. Thyroid is very important.
What do you mean a thyroid is very important? If there's something wrong with your thyroid, can that have an impact on your chances of miscarrying?
Yes. So there are certain conditions that are autoimmune. So one of the more common autoimmune conditions affects your thyroid. And remember that to maintain a pregnancy, you need different kind of hormones to maintain that pregnancy. So your thyroid is also plays a role in maintaining your pregnancy. So if you have antibodies against your thyroid, it can also affect your pregnancy. So we also check for that after two miscarriages.
So, but if you know that you have thyroid issues, because I do also know friends of mine who are like on medication for thyroid, for lethargic thyroid or whatever it is, would that then mean that you have to do certain things if you then decide to get pregnant, certain things to help prevent then? There is certain interventions that you can have beforehand. That's what I'm asking.
100%. So that's exactly the point. So if you have a thyroid problem, your pregnancy ideally should be planned with a health professional. It's not by mistake. You should be planning it and thinking, okay, we're going to prevent certain things. There are certain tests that must be done. We must maintain thyroid health during pregnancy. And already puts you at you're already high risk. If you have a thyroid problem and you qualify, you are a high risk pregnancy by definition.
Okay. If you've just joined me, you are on 101.9 High FM, and today we are talking about understanding miscarriages. We are observing World Infertility Awareness Month this month of June, and this conversation is part of creating that awareness and talking about this much needed topic and common topic for that matter. I've got a message here as well that was sent through us on WhatsApp. So please remember, if you want to be part of the conversation, you can send us a WhatsApp, not Telegram. Apparently our Telegram is down on 061-895-1019. You can send us some messages. The message says, after four sons, I then experienced five miscarriages over the next 7 years. After finding out that my thyroid was low, I took thyroid medication, and as a result, I have my wonderful fifth son, who is now a surgeon. This is a message from a guest. See there, and the doctor was just now talking about that thyroid issues that can be actually causing and put you at higher risk for miscarriage. And as you said, you're putting it, you're in a high-risk pregnancy already if you have thyroid issues. Another question I have on that, though, is that what other factors puts you in a high risk, like age, for instance? The higher you are as a mom, would that put you also at a higher risk pregnancy and a higher chance of miscarrying?
Yes. So extremes of age. I think extremes of age is a better way of putting it.
I like that. You're very diplomatic in your answer there.
Yeah, the older you are and the younger you are, the higher your risk of miscarriage. The older patients, the reason for that is because as you age, the quality of your eggs actually decreases. So that increases your chances of chromosomal abnormalities in your fetus, which then increase your chances of miscarriage. But not just that. Remember, the older you are, the, the older your womb is, the older the mouth of your womb is, the more chances that you've had different operations. So the risk does go up the older you are. The younger patients have a different problem, because some of them, the younger you are, you're not fully formed. Most of them, you're still developing. Your womb isn't fully developed. You're still growing. So that's so that there's like a golden time to fall pregnant. There's that golden
time. What is that golden time?
I was afraid you're going to ask me that, because I'm trying to be very politically correct.
Yes. But I mean, there is. I mean, in the end of the day, I feel there's a reality as well with women when you're producing your eggs. And I mean, in the end of the day, if you want to become a parent, it doesn't. And I mean, we can talk about choice and all that stuff till end. But if there is a golden time, I feel it is something to share.
Fair enough. That's very true. So a good time, the overall range, we say from the age of 18 to about 35. Is a good range to fall pregnant. However, women in their early to mid-20s are at the peak of their reproductive performance.
Okay. No, I like that. See, that wasn't that difficult to answer. Another thing that when it comes to miscarriages is obviously when we now talk about after you've miscarried, what happens? I mean, obviously, when it's early on, when you're in your first trimester, I assume it's just heavy bleeding, or is there something else that needs to happen? What happens after you've miscarried?
The management. So we can divide the management into different disciplines. Let's talk clinical. Let's talk what we do as doctors, because I feel like that's a bit easier. Early miscarriages, early on, most miscarriages are complete, as in the whole pregnancy and all of the products come out without much intervention. Now, before 12 weeks specifically, say you need some intervention, the medical management of miscarriage, there are two pills that we use. One is to drink and one you put per vaginum. And that hastens the miscarriage. So we cause the miscarriage, and it also increases the chances that everything will come out without you having to go to theater to evacuate your uterus. Obviously, there's also that option, which is the surgical option. And each one, the surgical option is taking you to theater, cleaning everything, making sure everything's out. And there are benefits to each. Because the surgical one, you go to surgery, so that's not a good thing, which means anesthesia, they put you to sleep, etc. But the good thing is once everything's out, everything's out. The bleeding then subsides.
Is there sometimes a necessity to have surgical?
Yes, there is instances. And I was very careful to say less than 12 weeks. Because usually after 12 weeks, we do need to go and make sure that everything is out. But before 12 weeks, you can usually get away with medical or even expectant, where you just watch the patient and afterwards make sure that everything is out.
Okay. Why is that so important, that everything is out?
Very good question. And to answer that question, one of the biggest killers in our country still, unfortunately, is unsafe terminations of pregnancy. Because if you go somewhere and they give you pills and you bleed, but not everything is out, what remains behind is going to sit there. But remember, in a normal pregnancy, you have coverings that protect the pregnancy so that bugs, bacteria can't get to it. But now you've ruptured that, which means now you're at risk of infection. So if it stays there, bacteria is going to find its way up there, especially since now the mouth of the womb is also open. You're going to get an infection. You're going to be septic. Your uterus is basically going to rot, and that will kill you. That is one of the commonest causes of death still. So unsaved TOPs, definitely no. So the reason is for the fact that we're trying to prevent that. We're trying to prevent that infection and sepsis.
And that's a good reason. It's a very good reason to do it.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker. Is brought to you with compliments of Dis-Chem Baby City.
And if you've just joined me, you are on 101.9 High FM, and this is Bump and Beyond. And unfortunately, we are running out of time, and I've just spoken to Dr. Maatu, who's joining me to talk about understanding miscarriages. And honestly, I've learned so much already today, really. And I mean, just the fact, I think, as well, to tell moms, I don't feel it's always anything that you're doing wrong that's causing there. I mean, we did talk about the preventative part of it. And now we were talking about also what happens afterwards. And Michelle, as you mentioned, this is an ongoing conversation. So we definitely will have to get both of you back on here again to talk about this, because we're not done. By far, we're not done on this topic. And lots of parents are and moms are sharing their experiences. And I wish I could share all of those with you. But before you go, I wanted to talk about, because we now talked about what would be the medical situation, either surgery or you can drink a pill if you are miscarrying. But the reality is that we could feel that rawness of the messages that I have shared, is that moms feel like it's because it's a loss, yeah. And parents obviously experience this as a loss. How do we deal with it? How do we help parents with that grief? And not just sweeping it under the table that, you know, it was now you have two healthy children. And how do we deal with that? Michelle, maybe you can share a little bit of that.
So this is a huge passion of mine, is perinatal loss, and that obviously includes early pregnancy as well. And I think how we can help is actually start raising awareness in the language that we use and in the things that we say to people, and obliterating the words "at least" from our vocabulary. So, you know, like, for example, I suffered from secondary infertility, for example, and that's another whole conversation as well. But I would have people saying to me, you know, just be grateful. At least you've got one child, at least this, at least that, you know, and we've got to actually stop saying to people who have lost "at least." Another thing is Dr. Maatu was talking about the extremes of age. And, you know, for the younger people who have lost a pregnancy, we should also really think about things before we say them and stop saying things like, you know, "well, at least you're young, at least you can still get pregnant. You know, you've still got many years ahead of you to get pregnant." So I think in helping parents, it's just realizing the words that we say are very helpful or very dangerous, you know, because it's something that will stay with you forever. I think we can also really start thinking about the secondary losses that these parents go through as well. You know, it is the loss, and that's a bit of a cliche, but it is so true. The loss of the hopes, the loss of the dreams, the loss of the actual pregnancy, the loss of feeling special of being pregnant, you know, all of that kind of disappears, you know, and all of a sudden you're almost back to being normal again without having the attention of being pregnant. And, you know, so we've got to just start thinking about the secondary losses that the moms go through as well. Also in hospitals, when the moms go into hospitals, a miscarriage not always goes into maternity. Sometimes the miscarriage moms will go into medical or surgical. And it's just raising awareness in those wards that these moms have suffered a loss. You know, they may be lying next to someone who's got a broken leg, or, you know, but we've got to just raise awareness that this mom has just suffered a loss. And what we try to do, Saskia and myself, we try and just make sure that they know the story behind the pregnancy. What is the story behind the loss? Is this the last embryo, for example, if they've been through a whole IVF treatment? Could this have been their last embryo? So, you know, we try and find out what is the story behind the loss, and just support them in that way. So I hope that answers a little bit.
Yes. Oh, Michelle, just before you go, can you just, again, Tato, Michelle, we're going to have to get you back. This is an ongoing conversation.
Yeah, I would love to, and we really have to talk
about it again. But please, before you go, can you please just share where people can reach you and where people can get into contact with you if they're either struggling or have experienced miscarriage?
Well, I would say that, you know, from my point of view, obviously we're here as FemiCare, and as I said, Dr. Mart was one of the most compassionate, empathetic people I've ever met. So I would get hold of him. Email is reception@femicarefertility.co.za, or they can go to the website, which is femicarefertility.co.za. And we are obviously all on all the social media platforms as well. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok as well.
Great. Thank you so much for joining me. It was very
insightful.
Thank you for helping to create awareness on this very important
thank
topic.
Thank you. We would love to come back. My partner in crime over there, I hope he will agree, and I'm sure he will. He doesn't have a choice. But we would love to come back. So thank you for having us, Yolandi. Really
not a problem. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thank you, guys.